Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. Fired up today because, well, we get to peel back a layer or two on both my experience with cars and the headaches that they give me and Kevin's experience in cars and all the headaches he's been through as well. It's all about lessons learned today.
That's right. But, hey, I'm going to preface that, hey, these happened a long time ago. And today I'm perfect, man. I don't make mistakes. Right? These are newbies. Nah, just kidding, man. We're always learning. But my other preface is literally everything we talk about, it was from a friend, right?
Yeah.
It was a friend mistake, and we're just sharing it with you.
Sure. But look, you know, it's funny, man, because anything in life, any sport, hobby, anything you're crazy passionate about, typically you push on it and lean on it and try to learn more because you're so, you know, you're absorbing everything there is to understand and know and learn and sort of get involved with it. You know, you make mistakes. I raced pro motocross for a number of years here in Colorado, and I'd always go out to practice, and, you know, I was riding with a bunch of fast guys, and they'd always tell me, man, hey, you didn't crash once today. And I'm like, yeah, it's a good day. And he's like, well, I don't know, man, because if you ain't crashing, you're not pushing hard enough. And I'm like, oh, touche. There's something about pushing. There's something about figuring out. And, you know, I oftentimes say there's strength in the struggle. And typically one of your best sort of means to educate yourself and your best teacher is your last mistake. And that's so true in the automotive world, in the car world. And we're going to give you several examples of it today.
Yeah, little flashbacks, man. Little looking back humor at, all the distance that we've covered. And there's still more because there's always something else to learn. But yeah, man, got some good stories, good examples, good lessons learned. So I hope you guys, maybe pick up a few, probably relate to a lot of them and probably laugh your tail off at, you know, how dumb we could be at some point in our lives, you know?
Yeah, man. It's, you know, and it's funny because most of us, like you, Kev, you got started. How old were you when you got the car bug, man? Was it before you ever had your license? Did you have it? Was it, you know, shortly after you got your license? When did it bite you?
Oh, yeah. Just a tiny kid. As soon as I could draw. My grandmother always would talk about it. Says you always ask for paper or pen and would just draw cars, you know, and then there's the Hot Wheels, right? So it was the Hot Wheels. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I had a small collection. We didn't have a lot of money, but, you know, friends, we'd pool them together, man. It was, oh, I was swimming in that stuff. And, yeah, it just kind of progressed. Now for me, I was solo. My dad was never into cars. No one really in my family or friend, neighbor, or whatever. So it was just whatever I could dig up, every Hot Rod magazine, you know, you name it. Eventually, I was going to the bookstore and just buying the Smokey Eunuch books and this and that, just trying to learn and then just fail, right? That, yeah, to me, that was, I had no teacher other than just go fail. Right.
It's funny for me. My dad was kind of unique because as a kid, one of my first memories is him racing this 57 Chevy that is actually in one of my shops right now. And that car, I laugh about it because it truly was my first memory and probably one of the first ways that I got so ingrained in that car culture and that lifestyle. I was always obsessed as a kid and even growing up as a teenager. My dad got out of it, you know, by the time I was a teenager, although he did have a nice house with a pretty decent shop and or garage attached to it. So we found home there and doing a lot of the work. And on occasion we would get dad to come out, lend some knowledge, but he was about more so about letting us learn on our own, which meant a lot of mistakes, man. We definitely shared in a bunch of them from paint jobs to engine builds to, you know, what not to do when it comes to your first nitrous kit. I learned a lot of lessons along the way and, you know, everything from driving and all the supporting cast of what it has to make a car go fast or go around a road course pretty quick and those type things, man. It's one of those things that we sharing that passion. You guys listening probably sharing that passion and probably have got memories along the way that, you know, you two have failed, but isn't that part of the story? Isn't that really what makes the story so great?
It makes the accomplishment that much more meaningful, right?
Yeah.
When you actually, you know, you got your latest project or just, you know, thinking about the moment in time where you are and what you've accomplished, all these various steps, you know, you're like, wow. You know, you think back where I started from, all the lessons I had to learn, all the fails in between and where yeah. you're at. And obviously, you know, there's still more to go, but we'll take a quick break here, but hopefully, you know, when we come back, man, we'll have some great stories. You know, we were laughing before kicking on the show here that, you know, the more I sit here and think about it, my list could go on forever and ever. So we're just going to barely scratch the surface here, but we'll have some fun with it. Hopefully you guys can have some fun and think about some of yours and relate to ours.
Exactly, man. Quick break. We're back at it. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. Kevin Bird, Willie B. We'll see you on the other side of the break. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He's Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. And today we're talking about lessons learned. Honestly, you're not a real hot rod unless you've learned a lesson or two or five or 12 or 20. Really, depending on how long you've been in the car game.
Man, I got zeros after those numbers, man. I don't know. Oh, a lot of hard knocks. But
it was funny for me, man. I remember as a kid, it was always about who had the fastest car. We had a little hangout in my little small town, and I grew up in Kentucky. It was called Piggly Wiggly Grocery Store. The high school was right beside of it. So between the high school parking lot and the Piggly Wiggly was the hangout. And it was just long enough where you can catch a nice 8 mile, 660-foot burnout if you can make it between the Piggly Wiggly and the high school. And, yeah, I always wanted to be the fastest guy. So my first mistake was being that kid that didn't care about how much it cost. I cut grass. I worked at Famous Recipe Chicken. I got on a radio when I was 15 years old. So I was doing so many jobs to try to pay for an engine, a big block in my 71 Dodge Charger. I'd saved the money cutting grass. I'd worked at Famous Recipe Chicken. I paid cash for this Dodge Charger, $2,500 wow. for a 1971 Dodge Charger. And it had a 318 in it. And I'd bought a 440. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm going big block, baby. So what did my dummy, you know, silly 16-year-old kid self do? I went and ordered the biggest camshaft. Right? I had a tunnel ram. Nobody runs around town in a tunnel ram on a streetcar. I had a tunnel ram, 2.4s. I took those hollies apart and every square edge, you know. I live in tree. As you look into the bowl, you have a little square edge. I rounded it off so it flowed about 40 to 50 CFMs more. They were 2 390s. And man, I would foul plugs every 40 miles and think I was the baddest dude in the world. It was a fast car when I got it to run, but it had a points ignition. You know, it didn't have electronic ignition back then. So I was taking fingernail files and, you know, filing down the points and setting the dwell and trying to, you know, click off a decent time. And I never forget the first time ever as a 16-year-old kid going down the track. What was my ET?
Ooh, what was your ET with a tunnel yeah. ram?
Yeah, and it ran like plugs. A dog, dude. It ran like a dog. I didn't know much about tuning at the time, but I was 16, and I wanted to get to the track, man. I was like, I got to get to the racetrack because I got a race car.
Did you break into the 11s?
No. No, not even. My first time down the track. 1356,
wow.
bro.
Nice.
It stung a little bit. I thought for sure I was going to run the 11s.
With the big cam and everything, right?
Yeah. I went to the bottom of the page and ordered the biggest one. You know, I don't need to talk about stall. Just send me the camshaft.
Right.
Yeah, man. So every one of my components just worked against one another, you know? And I didn't really realize what I was doing until, you know, I was getting smoked by every Tom, Dick, and six-cylinder Harry out in the world, and I couldn't understand why my car that had all these go-fast parts in it wouldn't go fast. Well, it's because nothing worked cohesively together, you know? My intake wasn't right for the camshaft, and the camshaft wasn't right for the heads and, you know, the stroke, and everything was just wrong with the car. So after I figured that out a year or two later and getting mopped up by everybody, I had a wise man at a machine shop educate me a little bit on making sure everything worked within the same RPM, ratios, temps, times, and really put together an engine that I could be proud of. And eventually, when I was a senior, by the time I was a senior, I really did have a 10-second street car and something to be proud of. But, man, my sophomore year in high school, I was humiliated. I was laughed at, man.
That's awesome, because you know what? I can relate. I think everybody probably bought too big a can at some point in their life, you know? So I had my first car. God, I wanted a 70 fastback. I'm 15. I got my money saved up, mowing lawns, all that jazz. And a family friend had a 70 Mustang. And of course, the parents convinced me we had to take it to a mechanic. And they said, oh, look at all these things you got to repair. You know, duh, of course. It's a cool car, you know? And it's on the cheap. Ended up with a third-gen Camaro, but it was a V6 car. Oh, my God, did that hit me hard. Just a little bit later, I got my license, and I'm like, wow, this is really slow.
So, no cool points for you with a six-cylinder.
No. So it didn't take long at all, man. I'm 16. Whatever other lawnmower money I had, no parental, you know, hardly a toolbox, but I ripped that six-cylinder right out, the transmission, the rear end, and I started building motors with books. My parents are flipping out like, what is he doing? He took the whole car apart. It's never going to leave this garage. But somehow, you know, I started building some motors, you know, and fast forward a few years, a year or two, got a job at an engine shop. So it was like every time, ooh, I learned how to port and polish. Boom. You know, I'd pull that motor out and start. So I started, went through motor after motor or build after build, just whatever I was learning, I was doing. So that was a cool process. And, you know, I finally tapped into a good resource. But if I fast forward a little bit, now I'm in college. I'm working as a mechanic at a Tuffy's, working my way through engineering. And I had my car. I had my latest motor, big, you know, high-rise manifold. You know, I had a cowl induction fiberglass hood that I'd saved up my money and bought, you know, used. And now everything fit, because before I had to cut a hole out, you know, for the air cleaner.
Right. I had the hole for a tunnel rim.
But the hood came with, hood locks. But they weren't pins where you could see where the pin was in or out. You know, like the locking pin. It had the, like, bicycle lock, you know. Set it down and you had the bicycle lock kind of key. So anyway, I was working on the car and at Tuffy after work, and I guess, you know, some car stalled out in the middle of the road and all the mechanics were like, hey, help push. So I dropped the hood, went over to help push the car, cleaned up, did all that stuff. When I got back in the car again to go drive off, didn't realize it wasn't latched. Pulled out of that Tuffy parking lot, went flying down the road, banged a gear or two, and then whoop. The hood flies up and rips right off both corners where it's mounted, flies up into the air. I don't know how high. You could have put a string on that thing and called it a kite.
Wow.
This is like a brand new, you know, purchase. It was used, but it was a brand new purchase for a broke college kid. And that thing just flew off into the woods somewhere. I was like, go, darn it.
Did you go back and get it?
I tried to, and it was gone. Somebody had fished it out or... Right. Man,
that moment when it flew off your car, you're like, well, that wasn't what I was thinking was gonna happen.
So I was that guy driving around for quite a while with no hood until I could afford to scrape some pennies together and score something else to put on top of that thing.
You know, it's funny though, isn't it? It's always the pursuit of that, you know, that big block, that, you know, power, that, you know, I got it, Mom, I got it, Dad. I'm going to, you know, take this six-cylinder out and make this thing go fast and respect it. You know, it's that charge to be on top. And once you get bit by that thing, it's hard to get rid of.
Oh, man. No doubt.
Speed has probably cost me more money. When I think about, you know, just the expense I have shelled out to make whatever vehicle I have faster. That's all I've done in life. My only real accomplishments, I can eat my weight in mashed potatoes. I'm really good at napping. Outside that, I think every car I've ever had, I've tried to make go faster in big ways. And I'm so guilty of that. And man, has it bit me, whether it's nitrous, turbos, supercharged, whatever, man. It's been fun, but boy, lessons. I've learned a lot of them.
Man, I have spent enough to, you know, pretty much support a meth habit for most of my life. You know, the only thing I really have to show for myself is that I still have all my teeth. Yeah, you know, and a couple of cool cars. So I guess there's something there, you know?
Exactly, man. So I got a question. What was your first mistake? So when you think about hot rodding, you know, there was big sort of evolutionary jumps, right? I got out of it for a while because I moved to Charlotte and to Florida and I couldn't afford, you know, a hot rod or a race car or a muscle car or anything like that. But when I moved back to Colorado, you know, I remember driving through this, you know, this little road and I saw the corner of a 70 Dodge Charger. And to me, there is nothing artistically, aesthetically. There is not a muscle car, a modern car, an old timey car. There is nothing in my mind more beautiful than a 1970 Dodge Charger. I know some people could, you know, throw their car out there and, you know, and be fine in a debate over the lines and the fluidity of it and you know, what it means to them. But for me, it's all about that 70 Dodge Charger. So I saw the back of one and I'm like, oh my God. And at the time, I just got a 72 Sebring with a really cool front grille, you know, like a 72 kind of Roadrunner. Really cool front grille in that car. I just paid $600 for it, and I drove down this guy's driveway and said, hey, I'll give you this car right here and $300 for that 70 Dodge Charger. And this was like 1993 or something.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, you won't give me that running car and $300 for that car in the field? And I said, absolutely. He said, shoot, I'd have took the $300, but give me the keys. So I got that car. I went that weekend, worked on it, and actually, man, it had been forever, but I did a quick tune-up, put rotor cap, plugs, wires, change oil in it right there in that field, pumped up the air on it, in the tires, and I fired that thing off, man. I drove that thing home. Did a freshen up on the carburetor. So put new power valves in it, new gaskets, cleaned the floats, the things I knew how to do at that point. And that thing fired up, man. So it was really cool. It leaked oil. I left a big, huge just puddle of oil everywhere I went. It was about three different colors. But to this day, I own that car. I've restored it twice. And one of my next lessons learned comes from that first time, like in high school, when I bought, you know, I got this, before I started building my own engines, the last engine I paid to have built was this beast stroker of a 440. It's a 500 cubic inch big block. Actually, it was a 542. It had Indy heads on it, so had some money in it. Everything cohesively together, meaning the, you know, the intake and camshaft and, you know, the compression ratio, everything is perfect. This should be a really nasty 600-ish, so, you know, horsepower, you know, the engine at the rear tires, which, you know, 750, and I'm out here in altitude in Colorado, that means something. So it was a big money engine. Well, I took this engine out of the truck and I lifted it up with a forklift, and here's the lesson.
Oh, there. No.
I lifted this engine up, right? I put the forklift, the little, you know, arms of the forklift out. I lifted it. It's a wedge engine, so I put it right there just outside the little oil pan, and I back up. Well, the forklift I had was low on hydraulic fluid.
This is like a horror movie, man. It's a horror movie. You're leading right up to the bad part.
And so I'm backing it out of this. I got it really high so the truck can pull out, right? So the forks are way high, and I go to hit the reverse, and it goes, and it just catches the gear, right? It's got to build up all that RPM, push all the fluid, and then it hits and the gear engages. Boom, the engine's not strapped down. So it jams the forklift in the gear. My brand new machine shop engine goes tumbling, full rotation, does a full rotation, 180 degrees, lands on the corner of the Indy head I just paid for, and I'm talking thousands of dollars, and cracks it. Yeah, man. So that race season on hold, rebuilt the engine, had to put new head on it, everything in between. So yeah, here's the lesson learned. Strap down your engine in any opportunity that you're moving it, because you never know. Same goes, Kevin knows about transmissions from an incident on the shop show one day. So strap down whatever it is you're moving, be it an engine or transmission to a tranny jack, engine to, you know, something like a forklift, or a, you know, pallet. Make sure you got that thing strapped down and secure, because you never know what's going to happen.
Oh man, that was painful. Oh, but you learned, right? You learned from that one, definitely.
It hurt, Kev. It hurt. It hurt.
All right. Well, I got one coming after the break.
All right.
You know, I talked about, you know, kind of being that 16, 17, 18, just building whatever variation of motor, learning different cams and heads and all kinds of stuff. So rushing to get one in a car and fire it up. So after the break,
hear this man. One. And my second one after the break, imagine being, I have a really fast street car now. It's a 69 Dodge Charger. I'll tell you about it coming up. It's a nitrous story and a nitrous story that hurts a little bit. But this is at a huge race. Thousands of people there. I've gone through several eliminations. We're down to the, you know, the quarterfinals. Four of us left for big money, no whammies, and a nitrous problem that we've all probably experienced if you run a lot of nitrous. All right, we got a quick break. We're back in just a minute. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. Kevin Bird, Willie B. We'll see you on the other side. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. And we're talking about lessons learned today. And when we left off, Kevin, you were saying that, all right, you're still in high school with this one?
Yeah.
What happened? What occurred? How painful was it on a 1 to 10 scale as you reflect upon this story at the time? Was it a 7, a 9? Was it a 10? What was it?
I was more of like the 8, 9 on the laughing scale. Recoverable. Okay. Recoverable. It was fairly reasonable. But yeah, one to remember. So, you know, I talked about building, you know, different motor combinations for my third gen small block Chevy, but you know, I'd started working at a machine shop and really learning, man. I was glued in valve jobs, you know, tearing motors down, doing the buildups. And, man, we had race cars that we would help set up. So man, I'd set this, race car, you know, iron heads, all really awesome port and polish, man. I got my set of heads. I'm port and polishing. I got my double hump, you know, 202, 1.6 yeah. Chevy, you know, like, I'm like, oh, and I'm so stoked. And got I got the
double
big
hump
cam.
Heads. Woohoo.
Yep. I got the solid lifter, man. Like this combo. Wow. I'm really going to move the needle.
Hey, that was a bad piece of equipment back in the day, man.
I'm telling
you,
might
have been 425 horsepower.
Exactly.
Bro.
It was huge back then. So, you know, you can imagine my just enthusiasm to get this thing together. So, you know, got the motor built and, you know, my spot was just the driveway, right? That's where I just constantly would work. It had a nice slope to it. So, you know, putting motors in and out, it was always by myself. So I got really good, you know, in high school with pulling motor and transmissions out on jack stands or even worse, some cylinder blocks, you know, under certain portions of the car, which I don't want to talk about. But anyway, I am just thrashing to get everything prepped and built and get this thing in the car. And I can't wait to fire it up. It's getting dark, right? But I get it in. I'm bolting everything on. I got the headers on. I got the wires and da 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 da. And I go to fire it up. And it's a solid lifter cam, so I have the rocker covers, you know, pulled and ready to, you know, kind of lash it up when it gets hot. And so anyway, it's dark. I'm firing the thing up. I got a flashlight, you know, and I'm going through my valves. And I'm so busy, you know, as the thing is warming up, getting the lash set up, that I didn't realize that my starter wire was touching the header and started sparking. You know, as the thing got hot, so it melted the starter wire. The thing is arcing. You know, there's like the smallest little fire down there of the insulation on the wire. But my dad comes out, and all he sees in the dark is me with a flashlight, and then there's some fire in there. I have both valve covers open, and he runs in the house, grabs the fire extinguisher,
and proceeds
to just blast the entire engine compartment. Valve train is completely exposed. I got, you know, fire extinguisher dust and debris and whatever
sulfur,
just everywhere on this brand new build, man. Meanwhile, I just went and reached in and turned the key off, you know, to cut the short down, move the wire a little bit, and it was perfectly fine. But, you know, he went in pure dad mode, like...
Yeah, man. That's like a King of the Hill moment. Ooh, yeah. Ooh,
brand new build. You know, this is a kid like, oh my gosh, I had so much like fired up excitement for this moment.
Yeah, literally fired up excitement.
You know, I didn't even get the lashing done where I could go whoom, whoom before it was whoosh. Oh.
Ouch. What do you use to clean it up?
Well, that was the part where, right or wrong, what I ended up doing was just getting kerosene and just flushing across each cylinder head and valve train. Just kind of try to break it down, let it get in the oil pan, drain it out, put a little bit of oil in, fire it up for a few minutes, So I kind of flush it with some kerosene and some oil. And I said, hey, you know what? It's going to go. It's going to go.
Yeah.
And hey, man, I ran that sucker forever. I romped on that thing. So in the end, it was only a, two factor. But it sure put a damper on my enthusiasm. That's
for dang
sure.
Oh, my God, man. Dad would have been doing detail duty. Yeah, man. Ouch.
Strangled him, man.
Yeah, man. So lesson learned there. Maybe consult with the parents on what you're doing before they take a fire extinguisher to your car.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a lesson learned when it comes to nitrous. I'm a big fan of nitrous because it's easy, it's manageable power, and there's so many companies, Induction Solutions. I'm a really good friend with Steve, and he's always been a long time good friend in the nitrous world. I started running nitrous a long time ago just because, bang for buck, it's really easy to go fast on that stuff. I've got several turbo and supercharged cars, but on my street car, I run nitrous because it's an old school big block. Again, imagine a 69 Dodge Charger. It's got a gear vendor's unit on it. It's a 727. The engine's a 542 cubic inch, nasty big block Chrysler, big Indy heads, big cam, great intake. It's a pretty hard running car. Now this thing makes a lot of power because it's got a pretty decent compression. I'm running just over 12. It's like 12.2:1 out here in Colorado, where the altitude is about 6,700 feet at my house. So this car runs, on spray. I only have I have two setups on it. I have one for the street, and it's, honest to God, it's just a 150, 175 shot. I can't remember what it is on paper, but it makes about 240 on the car at the rear tire. And I've got a 400 shot that I use at the track, and that, believe it or not, that makes about 600 on the car. It's nutty how it moves that car. So here's a car that's, it's just over 1,000 horsepower, and it's pretty rowdy. It's old school, so it's got a big carburetor on it, and I also run Colorado Street Outlaws here. We do a lot of eighth mile and quarter mile racing, and we invite several people from states and towns around to come and race. So imagine having this street car that runs low nines, runs 19s. And in Colorado, that's a pretty fast street car. Should go 8s this year, but I get booted out of the track a lot, but that's a different story. That's another lesson learned. So I'm running Colorado Street Outlaws in this car, and there's a guy from Kansas. He's a pretty popular street car guy. He's out, and we're down to the finals of this pretty fast street car, small tire matchup. And we draw cards and pick matchups and all that stuff. We're down to the last four. I'm in the mix. Well, I'm also hosting the event because, as you guys know, I do radio on the side, and I do a lot of hosted events like that. So what's crucial for nitrous, guys? If you don't know much about nitrous, there's a few things that are really important when it comes to nitrous.
How much timing?
Yeah, how much timing you're pulling out, right? Making sure that all your ratios are correct, that your pressures are correct, and you manage the temperature of the bottle and the temperature of the engine. Because as you increase temperature on the bottle, you're going to drastically change how that shot comes on. I've got everything on a progressive controller, which ramps it in a certain percentage and ramps it in over a half a second to a second, whatever I decide to. So here we go. I'm hosting this event. They say small tires coming up. That's my class. Well, the guy I race against, the guy pulls my number. Well, I've been hosting this event in the fall in Colorado, so it's kind of chilly. So every nitrous guy knows what's important, especially racing fall or spring events: the engine temperature. So the bottle temperature is crucial, right? You want that pressure somewhere around 900, 950. Most guys will tell you. You want your fuel pressure, right around 8-9 pounds. You want to pull a couple degrees of timing for every, 50 horsepower you're adding is a good rule of thumb. I pulled out a little bit more because I got a harder shot on it. But I didn't let my engine get the temperature. And I knew it the whole time. I'm jumping in the car, and I was like, man, they're calling us up. There's only four of us left. We're the first draw, so that means I got to go out there. So I'm stalling as much as I can, but my engine temp all the way over there only got to about a buck 40, a buck 50. So I had a sneaky suspicion it wasn't going to react quite like I wanted it to. However, about 330 feet down the track, when the entire top half of the engine explodes into a fireball and aluminum shoots out of my hood scoop and literally burns itself into the clear coat, I knew that I really, really should have let it get to 180 to have that thermostat open. So, yeah, I had never had it happen to me, and that's why I was questioning whether or not it was even a thing. But for nitrous guys, you got to let that engine get to temp, because what happens is some of that combustion on an overlap cam, which most nitrous guys have, some of that combustion gas is going to come back. And if it's cool, if the engine's not at the temperature, you'll get some puddling up of that gas and that nitrous in the runners and in the intake. And boom, when it's exposed to any sort of combustion, man, it lights off in the intake. It burned all the Venturis, the butterflies, completely off that carburetor and blew them out the hood scoop. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was nuts to see the carburetor, what happened. I had chunks of carburetor that were locked in between the valve and the head. So literally chunks of carburetor was ingested by my engine. So needless to say, I pulled that thing apart. This was kind of miraculous. I pulled that thing apart. I actually didn't have too much damage to the cylinder, so I made it out of that pretty clean. I had some damage to the head, had to order valves. I rushed them. I did have that car back together because everybody's at the races like, you blew it up. I didn't want to admit that I blew it up. I said it was just a small fire and everything
just
would get
a flesh
handled.
Wound.
Yeah, it's a small flesh wound. I had the car back in a week and a half at another event running 19s at the big racetrack. So I did all right getting it back, but let me tell you, it was every night adventure with a couple friends, and it cost me an arm and a leg not to admit to the general public that I made that mistake. So lesson learned, make sure if you're running nitrous, you allow your engine to get the temperature. It's an oversight, though, an overlooked, easily overlooked type thing if you're just out there playing. But yeah, if you're hustling up, make sure you get everything to temp, the pressures, the ratios, and you know, do so, double check, triple check before you push that button or mash that throttle.
Oh, man. Yeah, those are the big lessons learned.
That
man.
One hurt. Whew. That one
what,
hurt.
What do you think you out of pocket for that one? What did it take to turn that thing around?
Oh, dude, it cost me. I was doing my own engines at that point, but it cost me. I had to get the head fixed and repaired, reported a couple valves. God, an intake was damaged and a new carburetor. I had to buy a new 1050 or 1150 Dominator. So it cost me a couple grand. I was in that repair, you know, 25 hundo, $3,000.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
Said and done.
Yeah.
Yeah. The paint job, believe it or not, I was able to save. I got a buddy that showed me some great tricks and was able to sand the clear coat down, re-clear it, and save the paint. I was really fortunate with that. But yeah, that was a bad lesson to learn, man, and an unfortunate one for sure.
Yeah, talk about temperatures. Not quite as drastic, but just a good lesson learned. You know, good intentions. You know, in college, we used to race those little Formula SAE cars. So it's a super bike motor, and you build basically like a little Indy Formula car. I mean, super low, inch off the ground, super light. I mean, probably one of the most fun, most, you know, power to weight, most dynamic cars I've ever driven was those things. A blast. But I remember going into one of the competitions where, you know, universities around the country, around the world would show up in Detroit, and you'd go through a whole series of competitions, driving events, engineering events, all that stuff. But anyway, we had this idea, just like you said, you know, not having enough time to warm up, somehow not running the fan and letting the system warm up that to have the fan just come on. And I think at the time we didn't have the time to maybe set up a relay and a temperature switch. So it was like, yeah, man, get in the car. Don't turn the fan on until you get a couple of laps and then turn the fan on, you know?
Yeah. I've been to this mistake too.
Yeah. Like you're going to remember when you're just hanging it out on every corner, blasting through gears, you know, trying to do your heel toe fancy footwork, you know, when you're in your 19, 20 year old.
Yeah, man.
And then all of a sudden you realize there's just steam flying out. Everybody's waving at you and you're like, yeah, I must be going so fast.
I'm kicking that ass. Right, yeah. Meanwhile, the temperature's, you know, 300, the old temperature's 350, and everything's melting.
Yeah, so word to the wise, man. Make everything foolproof, especially anything that's got to kick on and off. Just stop. You know, either have it on and wait for things to warm up, you know, or, you know, do the right thing and put some kind of a relay temperature switch in there, control on there. Because otherwise, you know, more than likely, you are going to be distracted by all things that is racing or whatever you're hot dogging around, and, you know, you're going to miss it. You're gonna
and miss in it. An additional note, another nitrous horror story. If you're racing nitrous, make sure your nitrous pump, right, is armed and on. I used to run two different pumps, and one time on the dyno, the guy running my car didn't turn the nitrous fuel pump on, and it was another boom. So, yeah, man, put everything on one pump that can manage the system and make sure when you arm the nitrous system, your nitrous pump is on. All right. So it's time to wrap things up, man. We had fun and we just touched on a few sort of lessons learned.
Oh, my God, just barely.
Hey, let it be known that if you're trying to go fast, if you're trying to get performance, you're going to have stumbles. You're going to have falls. But there's so much strength in the struggle. You become a better competitor. You become a much better mechanic because you've worked through an enormous hurdle, right? You've figured out something that you were doing wrong. You corrected it because most of these lessons either come in monetary form or, you know, ouch, that hurt form. And you typically don't make that mistake again. So if you could share knowledge with other people, new racers, other enthusiasts, it's always wise to do so. And really, if you're not making mistakes, you're probably not trying hard enough.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, some of these are 30 plus year old stories and memories, and clearly they are burned into our brain. So there is no better way to learn, never forget, than to just screw something up, you know?
That nitrous one I was telling you about, I hated the guy from Nebraska, and he was like, get your ass up here. And I'm hustling, I'm in the burnout box. I'm like, come on, baby, get the temp. And as I'm switching everything on and I'm pulling through the line, I'm seeing that light, you know, as I get ready to light the stage light. I'm getting ready to see that light. I look down at the temp, and I'm like 160. And I had a second to withdraw. But if you withdraw, you lose the race. I'm thinking to myself, it won't do it. It won't do it, knowing in the back of my mind what I was about to do. It's like, it did it. So, yeah, lessons learned, man. Keep learning. You never know everything. And if you want to learn some cool stuff from the TV show, well, find it on the Motor Trend Network. It's also available. So Ayers Weekends on Motor Trend Network, I should say. It also is available on Motor Trend Plus, which is their streaming format, an easy way to find us and past shows. Thanks for our guest, nobody today. He is Kevin Bird, producer Scoop, and executive producer Bob Ecker.
Oh, right on, man. Just don't forget to check out our website, too, twoguysgarage.com. Share your thoughts with us wherever we're on social, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at Two Guys Garage. This Two Guys Garage podcast, it's copyrighted 2023, Brenton Productions Incorporated, all rights reserved.
Hey, between you and me, man, I took a first date on a smoking hot chicken in high school. Remember, I had a 10-second streetcar senior in high school. It was a bad car. But I'll never forget picking her up. Never made it out of her subdivision because it vapor locked or something. A couple things I hadn't quite worked out with that big fancy engine. And yeah, it was my last date with her. My first date was the last one. So other lesson learned, never take your girl out in your race car on the first date.
No doubt.
Wait till the third.
They don't care about it. No, as much as we do, they don't.
It's not cool to them at all, sitting on the side of the road.
No, they don't like smelling like, you know, hydrocarbons and burnt fuel or unburnt fuel. They don't care how fast, how loud. Yeah.
I don't understand flowers like burnouts for men. All right, you guys, enjoy. We'll see you on the next Two Guys Garage podcast.
Hope you guys had fun, man. We'll see you on the next one.
Two Guys Garage Podcast is a production of Brenton Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.